Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. Monday usually means EJ Raddick, but he's busy now. He's doing play-by-play. He's got NHL Now, but we did corner him for a show today. How are you, buddy?
I feel cornered.
Well, you're better when the fangs and claws are out, so this should be a good one.
Yes, and you're right. There's always me and you time, so there's always time for that. So
yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun, but you know, unfortunately, we have to start off on a somber note. You're actually the perfect person to have on to talk about the life and times of Clark Gillies. We got word early, just a couple of days ago. I guess it was pretty much after they played their game that we heard about the passing of Clark Gillies. And I know you growing up as a fan, right in the heart of that four cup run and what he meant to the franchise, the Hall of Fame player, just your thoughts, just a fan and somebody that I'm sure got to know him a little bit, just to his life and his passing the other day.
Yeah, I was really fortunate to get to know a lot of those guys. I mean, you know, at night when I have a quiet moment and I think about my life, I've been so blessed and so fortunate that, I mean, I was a kid growing up who loved sports and really fell in love with hockey. And I kind of jumped on that Islander team, was an expansion team when they came in 72. I can remember their first season and their first win against the LA Kings, and Jermaine Gagnon scored the first goal, or scored the game-winning goal in that game against the Kings. And their big win against the Bruins that year with Esposito and Orr. I guess the Bruins must have been out very late that night because the Islanders rung them up for, I think, 5 in the first period and ended up winning, I think, 9-7 or some crazy score. And then they got to be a great team with, you know, just legendary players and one of the greatest teams ever to play anywhere, really. And then as I got fortunate enough to be in the business, I got to know a lot of these guys. And I got to meet the Tinellis and the Trottiers and the Potvins and the Bossies and work with some of them, Butch Goring and Kenny Morrow, and just goes on and on. And, you know, I got to meet Clark many occasions. I saw him in October, actually, at a golf outing that we were at separate golf outings at the same golf course, Nassau Country Club, and got to spend really 10 or 15 minutes chatting with him then. And when I look back on that now, I just feel like was so fortunate that I got that time with him. But the biggest thing for me, Don, is just that it was so sudden and it was so shocking for, you know, those in the family and the inner circle knew that something had gone amiss health-wise. Most people did not. And I literally was in my office on Friday night just in tears.
Yeah.
Because of what he meant to me in terms of, like, that team meant to me. And he was someone, Don, that I just never thought would ever pass away. I mean, he was a mountain of a guy in so many ways, really. And you just never thought Clark Gillies would ever be sick or would ever pass away. He was Clark Gillies. And he was a great player, as we all know, and he was part of a great team. But the thing that I really want to emphasize is all the terrific work he did on Long Island, which, you know, I never grew up on Long Island. I've never lived on Long Island. I've gone out there, obviously, for the Islander games as a kid and spent a lot of time at the Nassau Coliseum. But hearing the stories from other people about the work that he did in that community, I mean, this is a guy from Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, comes in there, and he made Long Island his home with his family, and that to me, I mean, his legacy is endures for many, many reasons. And I, like I said, it really shook me up. I got to be honest with you. It really, really shook me up. And, you know, I just, my sympathy to his family and, you know, Justin Bourne, who's in the business, who's Bobby Bourne's son. He's married to Clark's daughter, Brianna. And so my condolences to all and to all hockey fans, because we lost a great person on Friday.
Yeah, and got a chance to know him when we originally had the Islander broadcasts on 1050 back in the early 2000s when they went to the playoffs three straight years with Peter Laviolette as the head coach, and we would do shows. And I think I'd see you there on occasion, EJ, at that Champions Sports Bar at the Marriott across the parking lot from the Coliseum. And we would be doing the show, and, like, to the right there was a pool table, and, you know, Clark would be playing with Billy Smith. Like, the guy, they were just part of the organization. I mean, those four straight Stanley Cups, EJ, you know better than anybody, is so ingrained in so many of the childhoods of people our age that follow that team. And a lot of those guys made their home on Long Island and returned to games and was just part of the fabric of things that went beyond the games that they played. And he was such a gentleman, so easy to talk to. It was really just a gut punch to hear of his passing the way that we did.
What a great, you know, what a great smile. Like, when I think about Clark Gillies, I just think about, he was just a fun-loving guy, and he had a great grin, and he liked the good time, as a lot of his really close friends and teammates have talked about, and just a terrific person. And, you know, I remembering that team, and, you know, 75, they had that kind of miracle run as a third-year team, and they got to the semifinal, game seven against Philly, and then they had the learning experiences of the next several years, running into a great, great Montreal team on a couple of occasions, getting upset by the Leafs, getting upset by the Rangers, and then morphing into a team that was battle-tested and would go on to win 19 consecutive Stanley Cup series. And, you know, really right to the end, I can remember that last series against the Edmonton Oilers, and you can remember that year was a year that they went to the 2-3-2 format, where it was two games on the island, three games in Edmonton, and then two games, if necessary, on Long Island. And in game one, the Islanders played really well in that game. I mean, this was a team that was kind of, they were in the final that year because they just knew how to get there. I mean, they had played a lot of hockey. There was a lot of miles on those guys at that point. And they played a great game one, at like 37 shots on goal, somewhere like that. And Grant Fuhr just played a terrific game. And then in game two, Clark Gillies had a hat trick, and the Otters won 6-1. And it was kind of that last gasp for that great, great team in terms of championships. And, you know, I always wondered if they would have played a 2-2-1-1-1 format, if they could have got back to Long Island and kind of regroup. But right to the end, Clark Gillies was you know, he was a battler, and that was a great performance in game two of that final that year, to go along with many, many great performances that he had throughout his career. And as everyone knows, someone who could score, he could play, he was bossy, and Trache on that Trio Grande line, which was a great, great line. But then he was also a guy that, you know, held everybody accountably physically in an era when that was really a big part of the game. And, you know, I'll just say this, Don, is that as a fan, and I mean, I was a fan at that time. I was in my teens and early 20s. When a guy fights for his team and his teammates, as a fan, I think you feel like he fights for you a little bit. And I think those guys hold a special place in our hearts. And, you know, guys like Bobby Nystrom and Clark Gillies, and earlier years, Gary Howard. I mean, those guys are unique players in that regard, in their relationship to the fans. So Clark Gillies wasn't someone that was a mean guy by nature. He didn't really want to fight all that much. He wanted to play hockey, but he understood that it was part of the job, and he did it as well as anyone.
Yeah, so rest in peace, Clark Gillies passes away on Friday at the age of 67. Before we get to the actual NHL portion of the podcast, DJ, and I know your time is limited, we'd be remiss not to at least speak on the incident between Jacob Panetta and Jordan Subban in the ECHL over the weekend. And I want to read a statement from the NHL that came out after the incident. Incidents of racism, whether they occur in hockey or anywhere else, are abhorrent. The NHL will continue to make its resources available to the hockey ecosystem to educate and inform, with the goal of making the game welcome and safe for all players and fans. Now, I appreciate that statement, EJ. And I'm not here to beat up the NHL. I'm kind of just here to kind of beat up on the system a little bit here. Are we past education and information? As far as, if you live in this day and age and you think that kind of behavior that Panetta displayed, does that come from ignorance or actual hatred? And to eradicate that kind of behavior? Because if you lived in these day and times over the last couple of years, EJ, how would you ever think that what he did to Jordan, and if you want to see it, you can find it on YouTube, or you can find it on Twitter or social media to see the video, of why you would ever think that's acceptable behavior. I'm tired of always using the enabling phrase of ignorance. You know, sometimes these are just bad people, and these are people that need to be eradicated out. So I just wish the statement from the NHL would be stronger, that there's no place for this, and players like Jacob Panetta with that behavior are not welcome in our league. So I get frustrated, EJ, and again, I'm not here to beat up anybody, but I'm just kind of tired of hearing about education and information and just start feeling like, you know what, maybe it's just time to separate the good people from the bad people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these kind of topics are, you know, they're tough topics, right? I would say that, I mean, you know me pretty well. I have a zero tolerance guy when it comes to bad behavior of any kind.
Yes.
And you've known me for 20 some odd years now, and, you know, that's it for me. I mean, but, you know, when children are born, they're not born with any kind of hatred towards people because of their skin color or differences. And, you know, we all grow up in different environments, and there are some people that grow up in environments that's commonplace in those households in which they grow up, and it's unfortunate. And I'd like to, you know, we'd like to think in a perfect world that, you know, everybody would treat everybody with equal respect. But we know from, even if you just crack open a history book for 2 minutes about the history of this country and the history of the world, that is not the case. So I think we're always trying to use those words. We're always trying to educate people who maybe have come up in a different environment and have had that kind of put into their soul and in their being, and to try to get them to another place. We've seen instances where, you know, there have been people who have changed, and you can hope for that. In the case of this one with Panetta, he put out his own video. I don't know if you got to see it, but, you know, his claim is that he was not making any kind of racial gesture towards Jordan, but he was doing this kind of tough guy thing that Tom Wilson does in the penalty box from time to time, and he claims that he's done it before, and he didn't realize that it may have been misconstrued as something else. And I mean, only he knows in his heart what he meant to do there. I think there is room for consideration. If he says that he's done it before, and if people come up with video of him doing it before, we've seen Tom Wilson has done it. I mean, I guess you have to maybe consider that as well. But the thing that really bothered me watching the tape of the incident was some of the racial slurs that were being yelled from the crowd that I could hear.
Yeah.
In the background. So, I mean, it's a big, big problem. It's a deep problem in our country. We haven't really wanted to fully address it in more than 200 years, unfortunately. We've gotten away. We've taken a lot of steps. We're much further down the road, obviously, but it's still a challenge, and we still have to fight that fight, that good fight every day. And I think, you know, good people that want everybody to be treated equally will fight that fight. And, you know, that's about all we can do. And it's for these incidents when they happen, if they're cut dry and it's clear, then for me, that's a zero tolerance situation. In this case with Panetta, I guess we'll have to sort through his comments and his feelings. But in the end, only he knows in his heart what he meant. But you know, a lot will have to do with maybe a conversation with him and Jordan that they'll have to continue to have. And I think, you know, that's where Panetta is going to have to kind of find his piece, is to have to try to reach out to Jordan and have that conversation with him and see if they can come to some kind of understanding about what was meant there. But, you know, I don't like seeing any of it. I was in Russia for the way back when, during the first or the big work stoppage in 2004-05, and there was the kind of Gretzky All-Stars. That wasn't the Gretzky All-Stars. It was the IMG All-Stars. It was the second one. Gretzky had done one of those, I guess, in 95. And Anson Carter was playing on the team, and we were in, I think we were in Moscow or St. Petersburg, and somebody threw a banana on the ice, and, you know, that was as meant as a racial slur. And, you know, that was the first time I saw that. And I know, talking to other black players that I've talked to over the years, Kevin Weeks, who I've become very close with and work with all the time, and Anson and others, it's not uncommon for them growing up in Canada and playing junior hockey to have heard that stuff. And, you know, we can only hope that we can continue to move forward and work forward towards getting that kind of behavior out of the wash, so to speak, of our society.
Oh, but, of course. You know, and everybody deserves their day in court, so to speak, and obviously you don't want to rush to judgment on anything. It's just a general theme that it just there's a culture here that just needs to be explored much deeper than I think it has been. And I do applaud that things are starting to turn and things are starting to change.
Yeah, well, I can tell you this. In my time coaching youth hockey, I've coached only, there's only been really, unfortunately, and this is really unfortunate, there's only been a handful of black players that, you know, playing youth hockey that I've coached. Now, I haven't coached in an urban area where there's, you know, there's the great programs. Neil Henderson runs that great program out of the Washington, D.C. area. The guys in hockey in Newark and hockey in Jersey do a great job. And there's all kinds of programs all over North America and Canada. But in my experience, I mean, there have not been a lot of black players. And it's really something that I think about, the experience that they have as being really a very, you know, a real clear minority in those situations. Like what it must be like for a young child playing in those situations when, when on occasion those things do happen. And I mean, I know those situations have happened, and it must just be, it's heart-wrenching to think about. And, you know, it's got to change.
Yeah.
And all we can do on a day-to-day basis is all do our best to try to make a change. And when things happen, there really have to be, I agree with you, there has to be strong consequences that take place to deter that behavior as best we can, and then to try to reach out and to help people try to change their way of thinking if it's possible.
If it is possible, yeah, that's for sure. So I know that was kind of deep, but you're a deep thinker. You're always pretty articulate when it comes to subjects like this, so I wanted to throw that by you. I know your time is limited. I wanted to try to get some hockey stuff in here before we have to let you go. And I've talked about this quite a bit, EJ. I have to still give the Islanders their day and a chance here because they've only played 34 games, but they're really up against it. But when you look at the rest, all the teams that are on the outside looking in the East, I know Detroit is close, right? They're 8 points back, but yet still they've played 4 more games than Boston. Columbus hasn't been able to gain traction. New Jersey either. Are the Islanders really the only team that realistically can make it in the East of the teams that are on the outside looking in?
I think that's probably true. You know, Detroit has had a good year, but, I mean, the Islanders have the kind of team. This is a team that went to the Final Four the last 2 years. So for me, you know, this is still a team that could put together a stretch of winning, and they've got some games in hand. But I think it's going to be a really, really hard run. And to be honest with you and the listeners, I mean, I'll be shocked if anybody outside those 8 teams are in the playoffs. Because, I mean, and the only thing that really – the only team to me, at least at right now, that I see could be vulnerable is Boston, only because with the Marchand injury, depending upon how significant that is.
Right.
That could change things for them a little bit and make it harder for them. But the Islanders have to start winning games against better teams. I mean, that's the problem for the Islanders. I mean, they played the Capitals last week. They lost at home. They played the Leafs at home. They lost. I mean, those are 4 points. They got nothing in those two games. And when you look at when you break down their season, I mean, it's almost a pretty straight split. I mean, the teams that are not playoff teams, they beat. The teams that are playoff teams, they don't. So they're going to have to turn it around dramatically. And if they look like they got 40 games left, I'd say they'd probably have to win 30 of them.
Yeah.
To get there. And hope then that somebody, Boston, Washington, somebody falters. So I think it's going to be really difficult. I'm of the mind, Donnie, that the teams that are in right now, the eight teams, are going to be the teams that are in the playoffs. And it's just going to be a matter of what team is in what spot. But that said, strange things can happen. And the old saying, that's why they play the game. So we'll see.
What's more surprising to you, EJ, the fact that the Rangers are in first place or that Chris Kreider is tied for goals?
I guess that Chris Kreider is tied for goal lead, right? I mean, I mean the Rangers have – we knew the Rangers were going to be better this year. And they have a lot of talent. And, you know, they're a team that was – you know, the arrow's been pointing up. So, while I'm surprised that, you know, they're in first place at this point of the season. And they're another team that still has – you know, they got some challenges ahead of them. And I think they're going to be so much fun for their fans to watch this year and over the next several years to see. It reminds me, we started out this conversation talking about Clark Gillies and the Islanders and that journey from the early 70s through 1980 when they won the Stanley Cup. It's a different world and a different league now. But the Rangers have a really terrific group of players. So, you know, they're going to be fun to see what path they can chart moving forward. But Chris Kreider has looked like a different guy to me right from the start. And I said on my show a couple of times, he almost looks like a guy that wants to be the captain of the team. And, you know, that was the whole thing, right? They gave out all those A's and they didn't name a captain. And it seemed like people were, you know, let's face it. People do campaign in their own ways to get things that they want. And Chris Kreider, to me, has been a leader in every sense of the word this year. And, you know, again, I'll go back to Gillies. I mean, Chris Kreider is a big, strong man. That is a really talented hockey player, and I think that he's taken his game, you know, like Clark, taking his game to another level this year. So we'll see how things go over the last half of the year, but boy, he's been terrific.
Well, I know you got to fly. If you want more of EJ Raddick, NHL Now, 4 o'clock Eastern Time on the NHL Network. EJ, always a pleasure, buddy. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, you got it, Donnie. Take care. All right.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's the great, and I mean great, EJ Raddick. A lot of deep thinking stuff here on the podcast, but I knew he'd be able to handle it. Of course, I knew that he had a relationship with Clark Gillies, both as a fan and as a professional, and I just wanted to get his thoughts on the ECHL thing. And I know a lot of people roll their eyes when they hear this. Hey, I just want to talk hockey, but I think that it was just an important subject to broach, especially since it's the first podcast we've done since the incident. And I just, it's really distasteful. I know P.K. Subban, Jordan's brother, was very expressive on Twitter about it, and Malcolm as well, his other brother, and, you know, certainly the things that they've had to go through, I'm sure, are unspeakable, and I'm glad they were able to stand out and not just defend their brother, but, you know, what's going on and how distasteful it is. The other big story, and it's coming up later on tonight at 7 o'clock when the Flyers play host to the Dallas Stars, and that, of course, is Keith Yandle is going to play in consecutive game 964. That will tie him with Doug Jarvis for the most consecutive games ever played in hockey. That's the Ironman streak that the NHL offers. And it's a tough road. I mean, because hockey is a very difficult sport to play. And to be able to play that many games in a row, that many different teams that Keith has been on in recent years. And also, you hold your breath every game that he was playing here down the stretch because of COVID. You'd hate to see him test positive and go into COVID protocol and not be able to continue the streak. But looks like all's a go for tonight for him to at least tie at 964. And I know Doug Jarvis has been paying close attention to it. And then tomorrow, Philadelphia is going to be on the island. So that record will be all his own. Wishful thinking, knock on wood, over the next 72 hours where he will have that record all to himself. But for how long he'll have it, because the second it does come to an end, there's somebody else creeping up. Phil Kessel's played in 940 consecutive games. He's third all-time on the list, so sometime this year he'll also pass Doug Jarvis. It'll be great to see them both get over 1,000 and continue to play. But it's been tough for Philadelphia, though, and for Arizona, for that matter. Both teams not going to the playoffs. Arizona's in a rebuild. Philadelphia is just in a mess right now. 11 consecutive games without a win. Two separate 10-game winless streaks already this season, and they've played 41 games. So it has just been an unbelievably bad season for Philadelphia. You got to assume that Claude Giroux is going to get traded at some point. We discussed that back the other day, that will be a piece to finally move to forget about the pipe dream of sneaking into the playoffs and just accepting your fate here and just start to rebuild. There's enough young pieces to build around there in Philadelphia, and certainly Giroux had a couple of goals in the loss on Saturday to the Buffalo Sabres. And how about Kreps getting his first two National Hockey League goals? You're starting to maybe see some light at the end of the tunnel with Buffalo with some of these young players, but certainly lights out right now for Philadelphia and their season. Congratulations. You have to go out to Bruce Boudreau, 1,000 career games coach. That's pretty amazing for him. So he's had a tremendous career. Things have slowed down a little bit in Vancouver since he got there, but he's immediately had an impact on that team from really going nowhere and kind of hitting a dead end with Travis Green as the head coach. And then Bruce jumped in there, did a pretty decent job, but now kind of things coming to roost here at Canucks, still having their issues and their problems. Talking about the games tonight, we mentioned the Philadelphia game. The other game that I'll be paying attention to, Rangers and the Kings, I'll be on the pre and post for that. Looks like no Hedl. He's week to week. It's a day-to-day situation for Kaapo Kakko, who was pulled moments before the game against the Coyotes on Saturday night. So looks like Barron's going to be in. There was a possibility that Gallant was thinking about maybe playing 7D and 11 forwards tonight against the Kings, who played last night, come from behind victory for them against the New Jersey Devils, a 3-2 win. So the Rangers trying to maintain first place, although Carolina's got four games in hand. And don't get crazy about Carolina's loss to New Jersey. I don't know if people saw that the Rangers and the Hurricanes played on Saturday, and the Hurricanes really beat up on New York, a 6-3 win. Both teams had trouble getting out of Carolina because of snow. Rangers got out. Carolina didn't. The Rangers didn't get home into their beds until about 4:30 in the morning. It certainly affected their first period against Arizona on Saturday. Lucky they were playing Arizona. They got their sea legs and eventually won the game 7-3. Meanwhile, Carolina never got them back and lost to the Devils 7-4 because they had to wait and then travel day of the game, and the Devils were able to take advantage of that and get a win. But Carolina's had an amazing season, four games in hand on the Rangers. So even though the Rangers have the two-point lead, still four games in hand. Arizona Hurricanes certainly the best team in that division. So those are some of the highlight games tonight. I want to get to your tweets, at Don LaGreca, hashtag game misconduct. And we start with Jake, who says, was just curious on your thoughts on the Eastern Conference playoff situation. It seems like the top eight teams are distancing themselves from the rest of the field. Do you feel any team not in the playoffs in the East has a shot of cracking the top eight? Again, Detroit's young, in a rebuild. I mean, they've gotten some amazing play from some of their younger players, but to make up an eight-point gap, to be able to have four more games played than Boston, even with Marchand out of the lineup, that's probably too much for Detroit to do. I don't think Columbus is ready. I don't think New Jersey is ready. Philadelphia is in free fall. So really the only team you look at are the Islanders, just because of the number of games in hand and the recent history. But I'm kind of with EJ. I think we're set with our eight playoff teams. Donnell says, as diehard New York sports fan of the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, that watches all three local hockey teams, Islanders, Rangers, and Devils, rest in peace, number 9, Clark Gillies. Never seen him play. Nice guy and part of a big dynasty in NHL history. He'll be missed. Well said, Donnell. David says, is Rick Bowness feeling the hot seat in Dallas? I know coaches can get angry and animated, but it seems to be having his share of meltdowns on a frequent basis this season. It's just, Dallas has been so strange when you look at like some of the wins that they had, and then they lose to Montreal. But again, look at that Montreal game. They had like 52 shots on goal. Montembeau was just unbelievable for the Canadiens, and that's why they lost that game. It's frustrating. I don't know what the long-term prognosis is for their head coach. I think Bowness was probably somebody who was thought was kind of an interim thing. So I don't know what's going to happen with the coaching situation there. And we're kind of, you know, clock ticking on Dave Tippett, although that was a big win for Edmonton on Saturday night against the Calgary Flames. Eli says, how stupid is it that the best goaltender in the league this year won't be at the All-Star game all because Adam Pellick has to go? We had this conversation a bunch. I think it's important for every team to be represented. First of all, it's an exhibition. Let's not get crazy about the All-Star game. I think it's for a younger audience, and I think to have every team represented is important for the fan base and the well-rounding of it. Shesterkin got burned a couple of times, mainly because of COVID. He missed some time, and they weren't going to send four Rangers. Because you can make the fact that how ridiculous it was that Zibanejad had to be the guy voted in. What I would have liked to see is if Zibanejad wasn't going to go, that they take himself out of the voting, and then they could have put Shesterkin in there, so at least he would have a chance to get voted in. I wouldn't get too crazy about it, but I do think having every team represented, I do think, is important. Tafro says, Devils' year isn't going well. Still, Jack Hughes and Jesper Bratt are having basically point-per-game seasons. What kind of contract extension do you think Bratt will get? Well, it might be interesting to see whether it will rival Hughes. Probably not, just because of where Hughes was picked. But I'm with you in the frustration with this Devils team. Again, they played well on Saturday, scoring 7 goals against Carolina. But they couldn't follow it up with a win against the Los Angeles Kings. They've got so many young players. Here's the devastating thing. They've got to be able to keep these young players, to be able to be as patient as they've been with this rebuild, and lose any of these young players because of contract situations would be devastating. So all I could say is the sooner the better to be able to get those guys done. Troy says, starting in the mid-80s, we witnessed an evolution of goaltending with the Michigan-style goalies. With the Michigan-style goals by Zegras and Svechnikov, could we be on the verge of an evolution of offense? Listen, there's just so much room out there now. The game is not nearly as physical as it's been in years past. You know, there was a time where you wouldn't have the room or the time to be able to try the lacrosse move. And now there's time. And I think it's great, because I think offense is what really sells in sports. I mean, you saw it last night with the Bills and the Chiefs. That game is going to go down as one of the greatest games ever played, because we want to see offense. We want points to be scored. We want to feel like teams are never out of it. For a long time, you know, when you led going into the third period, you never lost. Now you see teams, even good teams, not necessarily have perfect records when having even multiple goal leads going into the third period. You want to keep people hanging around, feeling like they got a chance to see something, and not turn off a goal, a game that's 3-1 with 10 minutes to go in the game, because you know a team might be able to make a comeback and score a flurry of goals. And I think that's good for the sport. And I think the imagination and creativity, I know John Tortorella gets irritated about it, but to see those types of goals and the highlights being played everywhere around the country, I think you're absolutely starting to see a tremendous evolution of offense in this sport. And it has definitely come at the physicality, and I know some of the old school people are disappointed in that, but with the concussion protocol and all that, it's probably a good idea that we're moving in this direction than in a more physical, plodding style that we saw for most of the mid-90s into the mid-2000s. All right, this was kind of an unexpected podcast because we went kind of deep with EJ, but I thought it was important. So we'll get back to the candy store hopefully on Wednesday with a little bit more of actually breaking down the X's and O's of the sport. Best way to get in touch with me is at Don LaGreca, hashtag game misconduct. We're getting, you know, deeper into the season here. All-Star break is coming around the corner. Looks like a lot of teams like the Rangers, they'll play a game on Tuesday, and then not play another game until the 15th. They actually have a full 2 weeks off. Some of the Canadian teams will be able to make up some time in February. So very interesting month coming up between the stoppages and some teams not playing as much. So you got to get the points when you can. And that's probably the message to every team that's playing right now. Looks like COVID's slowing down just a little bit. Most of the guys out of COVID protocol. We haven't seen as many postponements recently. So hopefully we're on the better end of that moving forward. So I'll have to cross our fingers and hope there. So we'll be back with you again on Wednesday. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.